Deze podcast wordt mede mogelijk gemaakt door Leidse Letselschade Advocaten, Van Dorp Kentekenplaten, Lewo, Createx, Verstegen Auto's.
Met ons blauwe hart, juichen met passie in ieder kwart. Van Donar tot Den Bosch, het maakt ons niet uit. Ze vrezen de hel van Leiden Zuid.
Ja, fans, volgers en liefhebbers, daar zijn we weer. Leuk dat je er weer bij bent en luistert naar een verse toppodcast over onze Leidse trots, zorg en zekerheid Leiden basketbal. En dat doen we. Vandaag net even iets anders dan normaal. In deze exclusieve ZZ Leiden basketbal podcast aflevering zal onze coach Dax Pertley in een 1-op-1 gesprek met Arie in het veld te horen zijn. Ik wens jullie heel veel luisterplezier.
Welcome to our end-of-year fireside conversation with Zorg en Zekerheid Leiden head coach Dax Pertley. We've had a wonderful year winning the national championship and the Super Cup. In this interview, we will look back and ahead. Coach, welcome in Brasserie Park, the location of one of our sponsors. And thank you so much that you want to take the time to go through the year with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Before we dive into all that basketball, did you get any chance to celebrate Christmas?
It was short. Yeah. It was short but sweet. Had a chance to spend some time with family. And 2 days, I guess. And then it was back to work.
Winning and Den Bosch did help for the atmosphere?
It did make it a little bit more enjoyable, yes.
Coach, how hard is it to be away from loved ones when the holidays are there and you're working and traveling all the time?
I think for someone like myself, it's become just a routine.
Yeah.
When I was playing in Germany and coaching in Germany, that was standard that we always played over Christmas. So to be only actually 3.5 hours away is not bad, because I had Christmases where we were in Berlin or we were in Ulm or somewhere. And of course, it takes 6-7 hours to get back. So I think the hardest part you have is for the young players, the new players coming over, first time away from home. And then at the same time, Christmas, and unfortunately some players are not able to spend time with family and friends at this time. Maybe the family has other arrangements or something. So it's not easy, but I always try to make it as easy as possible. I try to take the players that don't have family here, especially on the 24th, and we go to dinner or something, so they're sitting the whole evening at home. Just to make it a little bit more homey, I guess.
Yeah, really. Stay together as a team, even when you're not playing. Yeah, but
it's important, because it's like I said, you're away from home. Everything's foreign. It's yes, in Holland it's pretty easy because there's not really a language barrier. But still, you know, if you're sitting in your apartment and your family's at home opening gifts and you're on your computer opening gifts, it's different. The walls start to close. So, I think having practice and being with the team or doing something different, it's always a good scenario.
Coach, you mentioned it. I looked at your Wikipedia. You've been in Europe, if I'm correct, since 1989.
It's been a while.
Out of college. That's 35 years ago.
Yes.
You've played in Amsterdam for about 7 years.
No.
Amsterdam,
2.5 years.
2.5 only.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And then you went
to
Germany.
Yes.
Then already. Check. And you've coached in Germany, from what I could tell, about 16 seasons.
Yeah, from 2000 to, when did I come here?
About 3 years ago, and then some, So the question is, have you become a European?
I think I'm more European than American, yeah.
Uh-huh.
When I go home to visit friends and family, they always say I have an accent.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I also notice that when I'm visiting friends and family, after about 10 days, I'm starting thinking, okay, it's about time to go home now. And so it's...
And home is Germany?
Home is Germany, yeah.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Or Europe.
Uh-huh. Could you indicate maybe some like personal cultural differences? There's many between, what strikes you between Germany and the Netherlands?
Oh, that's a good one. I don't think there's that.
We have some stereotypes in Holland.
No, I'm not going to play the stereotype game. But I think one of the big differences is the openness of the Dutch culture and the people. Germany is definitely more closed. It's more taken back. Let's see what happens first. And that's the one thing I always enjoyed when I was playing in Amsterdam and also coaching here is that from the first day on, you're welcomed. And that's not to say every city in Germany is that way, but a lot of cities in Germany are very, okay, let's see how things go before we really open up. And, you know, I like the German freeways definitely better than the Dutch freeways. It kind of drives me crazy a little bit, but starting slowly to get used to it. And if I had to be really honest, I like the German language better than I like the Dutch language, simply because I can speak it.
Yeah,
guess if I was in Holland as long as I was in Germany, I'd probably be able to speak Dutch as well. But all in all, I think the countries are very similar. I think I've had a good experience most places I've been. And hopefully it continues.
Yeah, awesome. And your wife is German, right? So that
my girlfriend is German, yes.
Yeah. Coach, let's talk about ZZ Leiden. It seems a long time ago, but looking back at the first part of this year, which resulted in, of course, winning the title against Den Bosch, what maybe people forgot, you had a lot of injuries, a small rotation. What did that do to the team in, well, that was already December, I think, January.
December
with, started. With Stan, with Martin, Jibbe.
I think one thing that really helped us was the advancement of the second round of the Euro Cup. Even though we were beat up, and I think we traveled to Oradea with the six healthy players, you could really see the team come more and more together. You saw players having to do more to get out of their comfort zone. I think that's always a big part of it, the development of a player. And they were just basically thrown in the fire. They had to do it. All of a sudden, I had TJ playing the point guard, and we lose Jibbe. Then we're like, okay, what do we do now? And this and that happens a couple days before the cup semifinal, which probably maybe cost us the opportunity to get to the finals.
That was a series against Den Bosch that you almost won. Yeah. I think there was even overtime.
It was overtime. But I think sometimes through defeats, through difficult situations as a team, you come closer and closer together if you have the right personnel. Sometimes they can push you apart. There's many instances where that can happen. Yeah. But I think we've been fortunate that in the face of adversity that the players have not shied away from it. You know, it's my motto is always no excuses. And they really adapted to that. And then we were able to add Brock, who was a huge addition, simply because he could play two positions. You know, so we had a guy that could also help Luke out on the four, but he could also play some of the three because we were missing Jibbe and Stan, and at the same time, Martin. So that enabled a little bit TJ to move over. So we didn't have to just use him as a shooter. We could use him also as a point guard for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Marijn, I think, was clocking 36, 37 minutes a game.
Yes.
Luke was about the same. So we were also very fortunate that we didn't have any further injuries. You know, so it was the beginning was a very rocky, but I think as far as our overall development, very useful and very helpful, the way we came more and more together. And you could see that this team, even though we had a really funky phase right before the start of the playoffs, still didn't hang their heads. We found a way to get through it, and I think played one of the most dominant playoff series in the last few years.
Interesting that you mentioned that rocky period, because that was the one with the Antwerp game at home, right?
Oh, there was a couple games. Oh, there was the Antwerp game with what I think the highest. And I'm always remembered, someone always reminds me from the board about the highest loss in ZZ's history. I guess we won the most championships and we have to have some negatives as far as that goes. But, you know, that can really destroy a team. You lose by 50 at home and... And then we lose the next game, I think, by 30, the next game by 20. And there was a lot of soul searching. There was a lot of conversations, a lot of video. It was interesting. I planned a video and I wanted to only keep it to a certain amount of time because I thought if you go too long, it's too much. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first times in my career that the guy said, "Hey, coach, can we continue?" Uh-huh. And that was after almost 2.5 hours. So that showed you, that gave me a feeling right there. Say, hey, they're not to the point yet of saying, okay, I don't care, I just want to go home. They were still motivated and driven to try to turn this around and win a championship. And then we went to Charleroi, played extremely well, and that just turned everything back in the positive direction.
You talk a lot about what the players did in those difficult weeks. Was there something that, no doubt there was something that the coaching staff contributed to that?
I mean, everyone that knows me knows that I hate to lose. I don't care if it's 1 point, but I really don't like to lose by 20 or 30 or 50 or whatever it is. And so, I mean, the first thing I do is, of course, is look at myself and see what could I have done differently. You know, were we not prepared, right? Were we tired? What could the possible reasons be? And I'll admit, we were grasping for ideas. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's kind of just happened, and then all of a sudden, I think when players start to get self-doubt a little bit, it can really go in the wrong direction very quickly. And so that was my biggest concern, was to get the players going in the right direction somehow, some way. But it wasn't about, couldn't just come from me, it had to come from the players as well.
Yeah.
And so what we tried to do was involve the players in the turnaround process, you know, through anonymously given ideas of what they feel that could be better, or saying what they did wrong, or just giving them the opportunity to give input to try to fix a problem that the whole team was suffering.
Awesome. Then you had players coming back slowly, getting healthy again. You often hear from coaches, okay, great that they're back, but now we need to reintegrate them in practice. That takes a lot of time. It slows down the other guys. How difficult is that in general? And maybe how difficult was it this
let's
year?
Let's say the end of the last season, we had to integrate Brock. It was in February. And then Brock came, of course, a little bit overweight.
Yep.
not in the shape that we had hoped. And that took probably 4 to 6 weeks before he was actually in the playing shape that he had to be, and then we could really start to see what he could do.
Yep.
And then Martin was out 3 months, and then it took time for Martin to come back. You know, it's just because, like as you mentioned, just because you're healthy doesn't mean you're back. Yep. And there's timing, there's a contact, there's a conditioning factor, and all that has to be taken into account from my side, how many minutes I actually give him, if he's even ready for those minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But because of our situation, I just had to throw the players basically into the fire at times, and then you kind of live and die with the action. But in this case, I think it worked out positively.
You just mentioned, coach, and I think it's a positive that you hate to lose. You should hate to lose. But how hard is it? Because then we're Jeroen and Mia with those mics, you know, after a tough game or tough loss, you know, in your face, you have to do the interview. How tough is that?
I just say it's part of the job.
Mm-hmm, it is.
It's part of the job. You have to be professional. You have, you know, I don't think you can ever, you'll ever hear me make excuses. I don't think I've said that, even though we might have had one or two games that could have been decided a different way, but you'll never hear me say it was their fault. You'll never hear me say it was someone else's fault.
Mm-hmm.
If we lose, it's our fault. Mm-hmm. Or the other team is just that much better. And I think that's an important thing that any coach has to learn to be able to say, to be able to accept defeat. I don't like to lose, but I can accept losing if I feel my team did 100% or gave everything they could, and the other team was better, then so be it. Let's regroup and try to get better for the next week.
Coach, then you move into the playoffs. Did you have an expectation? Maybe, you know, we should be able to reach the final, because everything was coming together, but you had the difficult time against the Belgian teams.
There was one of our board members, I won't mention any names, that told me in, I think it was September, that we don't have a chance to win the championship. Because he had watched the practice of another team, and they looked so dominant and so strong.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said, we'll see. Mm-hmm. It was interesting because just because we won the game before the playoffs started against Charleroi, you still don't know how the team's going to react. Mm-hmm. And then I thought we came out and played very solid, I think, against Rotterdam. Mm-hmm. What's the... Mm-hmm. And we swept that series. And then we played against Zwolle, and we swept that series. And it wasn't that the games were lucky either. I mean, we were really getting better and better and better. And that's something as a coach you hope for every year. You hope that you don't play your best basketball in October or November. Mm-hmm. You want to play your best basketball going into the playoffs. But like what you mentioned before, we had no idea if that best basketball was going to come out. But I think once the guys got... You know, we had an extremely long season with being in two rounds of the FIBA Euro Cup, almost making the playoffs. And then with all the injuries, the guys just had a lot of minutes. The guys, I think, were tired at a certain point. Mm-hmm. And I think the excitement of the playoffs really started to wake the guys up again.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if I were to say that the team we had for this championship was better than the team we had for the last championship, I couldn't say that, mm-hmm. but at that time, uh-huh. I think we were stronger than we ever were, you know, especially going into that final series against Den Bosch.
So probably, you know, you mentioned it seemed in September there was a clear favorite not being Leiden. I could imagine that was seen to be Den Bosch.
Well, we had talked about in the summer that it was going to be a rebuilding year, mm-hmm. you know, because of moving into the new gym, not knowing. All the costs that were going to take place, we couldn't really maximize our budget as far as players goes because we always had to hold money back. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you remember, we started the season just with two foreigners and played all the way till mm-hmm. what end of January with two foreigners. Mm-hmm. And I think that also helped us quite a bit because you saw our Dutch players really become better mm-hmm. because that's something I like anyway, and I want my Dutch players to carry a big load of the responsibility. You know, mm-hmm. they're not there just to fill a spot. Mm-hmm. They're there to produce. And or I don't think they should be playing basketball. You know, yeah. I don't want, as we used to say, bus drivers out there. You know, nothing against Teo, but, you know, I want guys out there that can produce.
Yeah.
You know, and be ready to produce. And they were forced into that situation. And I think that really helped us. Because even if I think about the game... The year before the finals against Oostende, mm-hmm. I think in that decisive game, we had four or five Dutch players on the court when we won
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not afraid to do that. But you can only do that if your players have the trust and believe that they can produce just like anyone else. So I think it was really a combination of all the minutes in the guys' legs and all that stuff. And then, like I said earlier, the excitement. Once the playoffs started and the realization that, hey, you know, we can do this. We can accomplish this. And and luckily we were able to do it.
Was that what made the difference in the final, the confidence, the togetherness of Leiden versus Den Bosch, the core of the Dutch players?
I think so. I think you saw it was a combination. It wasn't, TJ shot extremely well. Mm-hmm. Brock played extremely well. But... Mm-hmm. You know, I thought everyone produced, mm-hmm. you know, and if I looked at Den Bosch in that time, you could see there was some uneasiness within their team. Mm-hmm. You know, they were, at that time of year, you shouldn't be bickering within the team. You shouldn't be complaining about who's playing what or if I'm playing, if I'm not playing. You should be focused on winning a championship. And I don't know what exactly they were going through, but, you know, when you see that, you're like, okay. That opens the door, and I think that really gave us the opportunity. And then to surprise them in Den Bosch by the way we did.
Right in the first game, yeah.
You know, I'll be honest, I didn't expect that. I didn't expect to win by, what did we win, by 20-something?
Mm-hmm.
I thought we had a chance, but, you know, we had lost there, I think, the last 2 years, mm-hmm. lost every game in Den Bosch. So, and then we carried that over to the home game. You know, they made a couple adjustments for that third game.
Correct.
But I don't think we were overwhelmed, but I think there was a lot of, again, some external factors that came up, you know, with the loss
of Veronique, yep. or Marcel's partner.
Yep, and that's, you know, you can do what you want to do.
Before the third game.
It's always going to be some type of distraction, but, you know, and I thought Den Bosch outplayed us that game. Mm-hmm. But the way we started and the way we played that fourth game and the way we finished it, and yeah, it was, at that time of the year, we were the better team.
Then we had the great celebration with you on the podium at City Hall, which was very enjoyable. And then sometimes you hear a coach say, we have at least as much work to do in the summer when we're not practicing, no games, because we have to construct a whole new team, because you're successful. Right. Everybody wants your players. Luke went to Den Bosch, new American players to be found.
Marijn to Göttingen.
Yep. For sure, Marijn to Göttingen. Could you take us a little bit through the process of recruiting a new team?
Well, this summer it was extremely difficult, I would say. It's always difficult if you have to compete against other teams that can offer more money. Mm-hmm. You know, and we were in a situation again this year where we lost basically 2/3 of our team. Mm-hmm. You know, and we, since I've been coach here, we hadn't had that yet because we always had the 5-6 Dutch core, mm-hmm. and then we just put the pieces around. And now all of a sudden we had to try to find the Dutch core, which unfortunately we weren't able to get at the time. And a lot of it has to do with situational, a lot of it has to do with finances. Mm-hmm. But one of the factors that had always helped us last the year before was that we were playing international. So yes. we had signed actually yes. one foreign player before I left. To go back to Germany, and I thought, okay, here we go, and everything was said, we're going to play international again, and yep. It took about a week, and all of a sudden, or 10 days, and then I was told we weren't.
Yep.
The first thing we had to do was contact the player that we had signed and see if he still wanted to come,
yep.
I mean, just to be fair, and he decided against it then.
Yep.
So then we started from scratch,
yep.
and it was very difficult to try to sign the Dutch players we wanted to sign. Also trying to re-sign Stan was not easy because one, you just did not know when he was coming
exactly.
back or when he'd be ready. Jibbe situation also was very difficult because yes, he's a young talented player, but he's played in reality only 4 months for us.
Yeah.
You know, and so who knows when he's going to come back and what he's going to be able to do when he comes back. So we had a lot of open scenarios that you had to try to somehow, some way calculate into putting a team together. Because you can't afford to have, let's say, hope that Stan comes back in October or November, and then he comes back, or he doesn't come back, but you allocated that money so you're able to take care of it when he does come back, and the same thing for Jibbe. And,
yeah. Exactly.
So that made it kind of difficult as far as trying to put that portion, because yeah. I always believe that you have to get the Dutch or your nationals together first,
mm-hmm.
and then you try to put the pieces around
yes.
it. And so then we weren't getting those pieces. So then we said, okay, then we have to slowly start looking at the foreign side and see what's on the market. Mm-hmm. And as it is, when you don't have a lot of resources, it's very difficult to sign players early. You know, the prices, of course, go down throughout the summer. And the one thing we always had was that we could offer the international side, but you didn't have that to
yes.
offer.
Yes.
So then I had to change strategy and say, okay, we offer the B-Next,
mm-hmm.
the exposure with the Belgian teams. And so that helped a little bit.
Yep.
But yeah, it's I always say it's putting a puzzle together.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
you got to start in
for
the corners sure. And on the outside, and then you start filling in the middle pieces. And this
yeah.
took me all the way into, it's the first summer in a while where I've really worked through my vacation.
Oh.
You know, whether it was calling players, talking to them, trying to convince them, or, you know, you have, let's say, a young player like Patrick who's never been overseas.
Yeah, and, Patrick Cartier four, that's
right.
Place to four mostly.
Mm-hmm. And
just straight
so
out
I
of
think
college.
Mm-hmm. I was getting ready to get on the plane to come back from vacation when mm-hmm. I had the last telephone conversation with him. And then I had many conversations with Aaron,
mm-hmm.
with TJ, you know, so it was like basically I was working through my vacation, trying to somehow enjoy it on one side, but on the other side, having to make phone calls and watch videos and stuff, and that's just part of the business, you know. It's when you become a coach, it's not a 9-month gig, you know, and it's basically, yeah, it can be a 24-hour job for 10 months, and then you got 2 months where you only have to work maybe 8 hours a day. You know, I've been doing it long enough, so I'm able to pick and choose, and think we have enough contacts to find hopefully the appropriate players that fit to ZZ Leiden.
Yeah, thanks, coach. That was the other point I had in this phase of the season, because you just told us you'll be in contact with them, you call them, try to see what type of personality, explain something about the team, the league, etc. So, before that is the step of, well, having probably a long list of players that could fit. Is that something that gets done by others, or are you involved in that, or is that more all kinds of, you know, databases that are around to?
I mean, yes, we do have a process that we do to try to make the list a little bit smaller. Because, you know, you're always getting a phone call from some agent saying, I got the best player, he's the greatest, he'll be the most dominant player in your league, blah, 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 blah. And I guess I would say the same thing if I was an agent, you know. But the one thing I've learned as a coach, when other coaches call me about my players, I'm very honest. You know, I'm going to tell them exactly what they're going to get, because I hope when I talk to a coach that they're going to tell me the same thing. And that's one of the reasons I very seldom ever talk to an American coach or a university coach, because for them, it looks very good if their players get the job. So they're going to tell you everything you want to hear.
I see.
And I've had that before where guys have said stuff like this, and then they come over in reality.
It's going to help them in their recruiting from high school.
Yeah, look, we got 3 guys going overseas last year and stuff like this. Okay. And so you got to be careful, and you have to do your work. You got to look at video. You got to talk to people, and hope. And even then, you don't know for sure. And then hope that they're going to adapt to the systems and how we want to play, to the living arrangements, to the travel, all that stuff. That's always the unknown that you don't know. So you can do all the work you possibly do, but you never know if it's going to click. So. Sometimes it's, I say it's sometimes a flip of a coin.
Part of it, I can imagine.
You just hope that you did enough work to eliminate enough negatives.
Yes.
Yeah, but I'm also someone that if I hear a couple negatives, I don't care how good they are. They don't come in question.
There might be certain red flags that you've experienced in your past. Yeah. Okay, this is not good, Coach, is that part of the, like you said, it's putting a puzzle together with a lot of dependencies, unknowns, also about the players that you do have but that are injured, etc., budget. It seems like we have a point guard, Aaron Cook, that scores quite easily. Maybe that's what's needed from him now, or was that part of your selection process? Maybe we're looking for a point guard who can both assist and score?
I don't think we've seen the best of Aaron yet. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope we haven't, because I think he can be much better than what he's showed so far. Mm-hmm. I think, and that goes for a few of the other players that we have, or the new players. It's always an adjustment to come over, and one, every player wants to be the man. Every player wants to be the decisive factor, but you can't have that in a team. That doesn't work, you know, and so with Aaron, you know, I want Aaron to be our leader. I want Aaron to as our point guard, as well as Dimitri when he's on the court. And it's not always about scoring. Sometimes it's more important to play defense. Sometimes it's more important to lead, to motivate and stuff like this. And you know, I normally don't go after scoring point guards. You know, I don't think. Majority of the times, it's difficult to have a big success with a point guard that scores 20 points a game, simply because that means the other guys aren't getting the ball.
Yes.
But it's nice to have a point guard that can score when he needs to score. And And that's what I saw with Aaron with the video that I watched. You know, he was able to get to the basket. He's got the athleticism, has a good eye for his player. But he also has to learn what I was asking, what I want, what we need from him. You know, is it score first, pass first? Depends on the game, depends on the situation. So it's there's always this this feeling out process, especially when it comes to a point guard. So I think we will see more. I was very pleased with the way he played against Den Bosch. Uh-huh. You know, the games before I wasn't real satisfied. Mm-hmm. You know, I think his percentage is probably for him at an all-time low.
Yeah, three-pointers are pretty low.
And free throws are not much better. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that maybe is a little bit of confidence, maybe about just, you know, there's always that X factors, what you have in players, the stuff that happens outside the court. You know, you, as a coach, you try to find out everything, but you don't always know everything. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can be just something for us. We're like, well, how can that affect you? But for a player, it can make a big difference. So, and that's not to say anything negative about anything that happened with AC, but I think that goes for every single player. You know, I think they can all play. It's about adapting, adjusting, and accepting how and the way we want to play, because I think that way has proven that it's successful. So sometimes it takes time.
Awesome. Because in general, because you had to, because the team was so successful and players went elsewhere, you had to recruit a lot of new players. To what extent are you satisfied with the outcome? There's no outcome because it's only December, because we have 5-6 months to go. But what would be your intermediate conclusion?
I'm not satisfied. I don't think we've found any type of level of consistency yet. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one day we play well and the next day, you know, I got the feeling that some guys aren't going as hard as they did the game before. And I think that's something that what you see from teams that are successful is that the one thing that they do is they play hard every game. Mm-hmm. And like I said earlier, if you go out and play as hard as you can and the other team is better, then so be it. But at least you said you give everything. And it's been kind of a battle with some of the guys, I'll be honest with you, to get them to understand how I want them to play or how we want them to play. Mm-hmm. And sometimes they accept it, and sometimes they fight you, and so it's just a question of persuasion and keep going. And you know, if I look at our record right now, I'm definitely not satisfied. I think we should have at least 3 or 4 more victories. So some of the games that we, in my opinion, just gave away, mm-hmm. or maybe even gave up. That's kind of a hard thing to say as a coach. That you know, maybe your team gave up, but I think there was 1 or 2 games where they did. But that's also, you can say, part of the growing process. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always got to be an optimist. And I think if I look at the way we presented ourselves against Den Bosch, even with the injuries, even with all the situations we have, I think that was a good step. And so now we got to try to build on it. We can't build on 2 weeks ago. We got to build on last week. And continue to try to move forward. But again, it's always comes down to the acceptance of the players and the willingness. You know, that's the one thing I told them. I said, if you come here, you'll have a chance to win. Yeah. But you have to be willing to do the work to get that chance. And that's what we're still striving to do every day.
Like you mentioned, we would almost forget that we contracted Sam Hurman, who was only about playing like 3 games before he got injured.
2.5 weeks.
Yeah, it's really, really a bad luck for him, of course. And then we have Brad Green, who's coming back from an injury. Roland, who's just, and still you had the really nice win against Den Bosch, who were really hot over the last
They've won 4 out of 5, so, and we're playing very well. You know, but the potential we saw, you know, I thought we played a really good game in Ostende. Mm-hmm. I wasn't satisfied with our defensive intensity, but it's a pretty powerful team. But it is very difficult when you continually having players play out of position. You know, I think Lucas has played more minutes on the 4, and he's not a 4, but we don't have any other option. We have to have someone to give give Patrick a little break, and then we had the injury. We bring Sam in, literally 2.5 weeks, yeah. And then he goes down for the season, and then you start to compensate that, and then all of a sudden Rulon sprains an ankle, and if in a normal situation, if a guy sprains an ankle, yeah, it's maybe 2 weeks, 3 weeks, but the older you get, the harder it is to come back. Yes. And there was something else that he did as well in the foot, so it just needed time. And thankful that that Rue came back when he did, because then Brad goes down.
Yes.
And for the second time. Yeah. And so Rue came back, and he was literally playing, I think, 60-70%. If you watched the move, he couldn't go left or right. He could go straight. And even then, it wasn't real fast. So it was, again, trying to compensate, trying to find a way. Just guys playing out of position, moving Patrick more to the five all of a sudden, and then playing small. And then we even brought in a zone, which I'm not known for. And so it's just you got to try to find a way somehow, give the team some direction that they can believe in and still have a chance to win. And I think even though we lost some of those games, I think we had chances in those games. And with the injuries and with the situation we were in, it wasn't that easy, And now with Dimitri's injury, mm-hmm. That's going to take also a few weeks before he comes back. So now we have, again, we got to play Jordan in a different position, Our young point guard at that position is also injured, so it's been a hard, hard 24. Just the whole year has been hard with injuries from last season to this season.
Absolutely.
And I'm hoping that with the start of the new year that those injuries start to subside and we can start really moving forward.
And still, you're the number 2 Dutch team in the B-Next League at the moment, and I can imagine that because you're around 500, but of course you aim higher. But
yeah, that's I think in the past 2 years we've had the most wins against the Belgians, uh-huh. if I'm not mistaken, and because I use that as a way to motivate players as well, because those players are all making more money than our guys and. Mm-hmm. Maybe our guys, that's maybe where they want to be at some point or higher. And so, so it is frustrating to me to lose all these games and also the way we've lost some of the games, like I said before. I think if we had 3 more victories, I'd be more satisfied than the way it is now. But again, I could say, hey, it's because of all the injuries, it's because of this. No, it's because we haven't we haven't had the team chemistry yet. We haven't came together consistently. We haven't. Everyone hasn't said, okay, I accept my role. Once everyone does that, now we have the opportunity to perform better.
Coach, you've explained, and we've seen that from all your successes in Leiden over the past 2 years, that you have a very clear idea of what you expect of players, how you want them to play, and the success that it will deliver. And at the same time, you explain that it's new for some of the new players. I need to either convince them or point them in the right direction. Sometimes, we're not really on the same level yet. What are some of the ways? Is it talking, convincing? Is it, taking certain...
So it's everything and above. It's video, it's just little conversations, it's explanations. It's sometimes screaming, sometimes it's being nice and friendly, sometimes it's a pat on the back, and sometimes I say a kick in the butt. Mm-hmm. Every player you reach a different way, and there's no guaranteed way to reach someone.
No.
Again, it has to be a two-way street. And sometimes you're left with no choice but to make a change, because I think, again, it's a team. So there's individuals, only as a team will you have success. And if that individual is not willing to adapt to a team and only focus about himself and not willing to change, then it's a recipe for disaster. So. I don't think we have that type of players. I think we have players that maybe are a little bit stubborn sometimes. I think they're seeing, and I think they enjoy when we play well and play and have success. It makes it easier for them to accept. So
hopefully we're going in the right direction.
They see what it brings and for them and for the team. Yeah.
Right.
Coach, I recall that from several interviews that we had just after games is that you also talked about communication in practice, but also during the games, because you know you can only reach and shout as much as you can. So it's also coaching players amongst themselves on the court, and you know, little warnings, little something that you're still working on, as you've explained before. How do you reflect on that?
Well, I'm kind of it's kind of a funny saying, as something I always say to the players is figure it out.
Yeah.
You know, if I have to tell you how to do everything, we're not going to be successful. You know, you have to be able to, you have to be able to make decisions on the court. You have to be able to find solutions. You know, there's not always a timeout. There's not always a situation where I'm going to have the right answer. You know, it may be something that you're thinking that is better for that situation than what I could give you. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of believe in that. Figure it out. That I think that also makes your team smarter and makes your team more responsive. But you know, communication is such a big factor, and unfortunately, it's not taught anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when you get players, a lot of players, they come from overseas or they come from the youth, even in Holland, or it doesn't matter what country, they don't say anything anymore because it's not cool. You know, it's I'm just going to be quiet, and if I'm quiet, then no one's going to yell at me, and no one's going to can't really say the wrong thing or do the wrong thing. You just kind of just be in my own little boat, I call it. And so that's been kind of one of the biggest struggles we've had this year, is to just, you know, we got a couple quiet guys with Jordan and TJ. They don't really say much off the court or really on the court. So to get them to open up, and then we got the exact opposite with Brad, who's always talking. You know, but sometimes what he's talking, you have no idea what he's saying. So it's a hard part to get everyone on the same level of communication, that because just that little bit of communication can mean the difference between a basket or not a basket, or a win or a loss.
Yes.
And because sometimes it's just that one action that decides everything.
For sure, for sure. Coach, a little strategy question. It seems in general, and this is across all leagues, all teams are looking for the three-pointer, because if you shoot it at a decent percentage, you'll just get a little extra compared to like a mid-range shot. How do you see that for your own team? Maybe are you looking for the three-pointer a bit too much because you're getting open shots? Well, they don't drop, you know. It can change, you know, a day later, a day kind of. But is it a conscious effort to maybe look for the three-pointer a bit more this season, maybe a bit less?
I think you look for the best shot. That's my philosophy. I think the middle distance jump shot is a lost art. I know TJ last season told me that he had shot more in the first 6 weeks of middle distance jump shot than he did in 6 years in college. Because basically he was put at the 3-point line and said, that's all you do. You know, he had a great percentage, but still, I think you limit yourself. You know, my philosophy is I want to try to organize or create the best opportunity. Whether that's an open three, whether that's an open two, a layup. I think when teams, and you saw this in our games, when we start shooting 30-plus three-point attempts, I would say probably 10 to 12 of them are desperation. You know, those aren't produced shots. Those are just because the system isn't working, because the guys are not doing the things they're supposed to be doing. Or maybe sometimes because the defense is that good. But you know, I think a good number is anywhere between 20 and 25, 30. If I look at the game against Den Bosch, what did we have? 15, I think.
Okay.
16, horrible percentage. But we still had, we had 10 more shots. We produced 10 more shots than they did. And that's, to me, more of a factor than if we shoot 33-point shots. You know, I think we have the capability to be around at 33-35% from the 3-point, which is okay if you think about it. That's one out of three that goes in. But we just haven't achieved that yet. And so that's something we're continually working on without putting extra pressure that you have to, you know, and that's kind of a fine line. You want guys ready to knock down the open shot, but you don't want to say you have to.
Exactly.
You know, you have to give them the option if they're not comfortable to take that middle distance or go all the way to the basket.
What are some things that the team is showing you that you're quite pleased about? Some of the strengths that are already in the team?
Yeah, I think we really started well, you know, with the Super Cup win. And
sure.
Even some of our preseason games weren't too bad. But then then it comes a phase where everyone's trying to be the man. You know, and so at the beginning, when you always come together, it's kind of interesting because they all come together and they all want to share the ball. They all want to be nice and polite. And then all of a sudden it comes to a phase where everyone's trying to make sure he gets his points or his shots and all that stuff. And and that phase took a little bit longer than I liked, because I think when I looked at the games where we struggled a little bit, especially we had too much individual actions not enough. Extra passes or producing good shots. So I think it was just more of a factor that we started here, we dropped back here, and I think we're slowly starting to come back into a team-orientated system. And I think if I got five guys on the court at one time that can score, that's great, but it's only one basketball. And so everyone has to know, so okay, well, hey, even if I don't get a shot, but if I set a good screen, if I make that next pass, or if I create for someone else, that's just as valuable as if I got the 2 points on my count. So we're hopefully, slowly but surely, going in that direction.
Yeah, sure. Coach, it can be a coincidence, but it seems that you're struggling at home so far. And I know everybody likes to show the best thing for the home fans because they are quite supportive of the team. Are you worried about that?
You know, yes and no. Of course, as a coach, you want to present the best results at home. You want everyone to be happy. You want everyone to, you know, pat all the players on the back. You guys are great, super. But what I want is I want consistency.
Yeah.
And I think if I really go back and look at the games that we played at home this year, I haven't seen that. I've seen it on the road for whatever reason. You know, maybe it's just because there is not that little extra pressure as when you play at home. And it's kind of interesting because if we go back over the last 2 years, I think our winning percentage on the road was pretty similar to at home, if not even a little bit higher at times. It's not that I stress it more, but I think it's just a question of, you know, maybe the little more pressure that you got a few more friends or families and stuff like that at home. But the one thing I do tell the players is that, and that's the thing I've come to really like about our fans, is that if you go out there and play as hard as you can and you win, it's great. But if you lose, it's accepted. You know, they're not going to talk bad. They're not going to boo you or anything, but if you don't go out and play as hard as you can, then I've told the guys, then you should be booed, you know, because our fans pay a lot of money to come watch us play, and it's the least thing we can do is to play hard, and I firmly believe if you play hard consistently for over 40 minutes, you have a chance, and that's all you can do.
Absolutely. Coach, final question about the current B-Next League season. Any expectations that you have for the team? I know it's a pretty obvious question and a pretty random one, because who knows? But something that you see that is inside the team, that there is a possibility inside this team that could bring you to a certain level in the league. And of course, after that, the Dutch playoffs.
I mean, first of all, I think the Dutch portion is really open this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think there's one or two teams. I think there's four or five teams that have the possibility right now to play for a championship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I think our team has the potential? 100%. I think we have the potential that we could play for a championship again.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think we're going to reach it? Depends on the players.
depends on the players, the acceptance, the willingness to sacrifice, the acceptance, willingness to give everything they have, and also about us coming at the right point and getting healthy. I don't know how good this team can be yet because I haven't seen this team complete.
Yes.
You know, we had one little phase for 2 weeks with Sam that I could say, okay, for what we had, we were complete. But, you know, like I mentioned earlier, if you got Jordan playing the backup on the point guard, you got Lucas playing some four, or even youngsters playing four.
Yeah.
So guys always playing out of position, or fours playing fives. And we haven't had the time yet to really lock in every player at his position and say, okay, this is how we're going to move forward. Yeah. It's been about adjusting. It's about just finding a way to somehow survive this phase. And I think because the league is so more equally, as far as the level of talent goes, we have, because of that, lost more games than we have in the past. Mm-hmm. And, so now it's about, again, I think, like I said, four or five teams. I think if we continue to improve, I think we will have a very good shot. But there is no guarantees in sports, so we'll have to wait and see.
We saw that last summer, so to say. Coach, for the final part of our talk, can you talk a little bit about, because you have two assistant coaches, Jan Stallman and Michael Meskers, could you talk a little about the way you distribute labor between the three of you?
Well, it's when I took the job here 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago, I didn't even know I'd have an assistant. We didn't even talk about it. And then I was told that Jan was an assistant, and I was like, okay, super. So, and then Martin, first year.
Yeah. Martin Howard, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And since last year, Mike is part of it with Jan. And, these guys got a normal job.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people forget that. They got a normal job. And what I asked him to do as far as scouting and breaking teams down, and it takes many, many hours. You know, it's not something you get done in a day. It can take 2-3 days. Maybe four, depending on their normal jobs. You know, they got to find a way. Now, Michael's not at every practice. Michael actually coaches a women's team as well.
Yeah.
And Jan is at every practice, but he also has his full-time school.
Yep.
So there are times when he, to be honest with you, he comes there and is from working all day with kids. Sometimes you're here.
Yeah, of course.
And but I think with Jan, I think we have a full-time assistant I think he wants to become a head coach. I know he wants to become a head coach, and one of the reasons we're working together because I think the personalities fit. I have really a lot of respect for both of them for the amount of time that they have to dedicate for basically things I'm asking them to do. Or on that free Sunday, I said, hey, you know, it might not be a bad idea if you try to drive to Den Bosch. We play them next week. Or if you go to Antwerp or go somewhere that.
Okay.
And because at me as a coach, of course, I watch our opponents, but I focus on us.
Okay.
I watch our opponents and I try to find a game plan of how we can prevail against the team we're going to play. And their job is to basically show us, show me, show the team, every single play that they run, every single call they can get, what their tendencies are offensively, defensively. And you don't get that by watching one game. You get that by watching 3-4 games, or like I said, going and seeing it live, trying to hear the calls. It's not easy. It's not easy. And then on top of it, your weekends are taken with our own games. Where the players may have a day off on Sunday, but the coaches, you know, what are we doing? We're watching the game from Saturday.
Exactly.
You know, and then when we're done with that, we start focusing on the next game. And another thing that Jan does is, now that Michael is doing more and more of the game preparations, Jan takes our games that we played and breaks them down, and then does some individual video with some of the players just to show them what they're doing right and what they're doing wrong. And some players are very receptive to that, and other players they don't want part of it. Mm-hmm. But it's exactly those players that don't want a part of it that have to do it.
you know. And
I can imagine.
So that's that wall you got to break down sometimes.
Yeah.
But I think both guys are doing a great job, and we're very lucky to have them.
Because if we look beyond the coaching staff, of course, there's the ZZ Leiden organization. Maybe there's some things, because with all your experience also, of course, both in the States and in Germany, maybe you see some have some recommendations for Dutch basketball organizations like Leiden or others. That might be a few, but what stands out?
Where should I start?
what would benefit you and your team the most to professionalize?
Well, I think it's all about professionalism. Mm-hmm. You know, it's we are very, very fortunate to have all the volunteers that we have. And I'm very thankful, and I know the players and everyone associated with the club. And without those volunteers, it wouldn't be possible. Mm-hmm. But if you want to take that next step towards professionalism, you need to have a solid infrastructure. You need to have that full, you know, two or three full-time employees that are doing the everyday work, that are doing the stuff that, you know, we're asking our board or our volunteers to do in their free time.
Yes.
I think that's one big step that I think the whole league has to implement, you know, because that means you're going to have less money for your team at the beginning.
Yes.
And but I think in the long run, I've seen it with Germany, it helps the entire development, you know, and ZZ's been very fortunate. We've been very fortunate with all the titles we won doing it this way, you know. And but I think a lot of that comes simply because the other teams aren't doing it the other way either, you know. Mm-hmm. So then it comes down to player personnel decisions and coaching and stuff like that. But so I think that's one thing. The overall basketball within the clubs has to become more professional. I think there has to be more development throughout Holland on youth basketball.
Okay.
That means also full-time coach, that means qualified coaches.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not nothing against the parents that volunteer their time, but again, if you want to produce players, you have to give them the appropriate coaching. And if you don't provide that, you can't expect a player to become a great player from nothing, you know. And so those are just two little things, I think. You know, I think also with the development of the managerial side also is a direct relation then to also filling the gyms, you know, more actions in that direction, that the gyms become fuller, you know. It's, say, we're okay, and again, thankful that all the people that come to our games, but, you know, we have a gym that can hold 2,500 people. Let's get 2,500 people in there somehow. But then you go somewhere else, and we've had that a few times, and the atmosphere is fantastic. And then you go somewhere else, and they got 50 or 100.
Yep.
You know, and that's just not good for the league. You know, it's not for the... And those are the clubs that are really that tend to struggle every single year. And, you know, you can't eliminate them because you don't have the quantity of teams that want to be part of the Eredivisie. And until we're able to put into a system, I think, like in other countries where teams can actually move down, like this year we have a situation where the B-Next wants to get smaller, so last place team moves down, you know, and that's tough to do in a country where we barely have 9 teams anyway, you know, but maybe that helps developing the infrastructure of the teams that want to try to come up, and that can only help the development of the younger players, and then through that, the development of the league will get better.
For sure. Coach, rounding off, let's talk about our beautiful city of Leiden. We're in Leiderdorp today, but that counts as well. Is there something you like about the city?
It's funny.
Do you have time? Do you have time at all?
It's funny because I'm kind of a homebody.
Okay.
You know? But I do like the atmosphere when you're out and about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone's seems to be not always in a hurry, you know, and especially in America or even in parts of Germany where I've been, it's like you go in the city and everyone's just
You know, and here you see, especially in the summer, you see people talking, you see, or you see someone that maybe was at a game and they'll approach you, you talk to them. Probably the most time I spend outside of the gym are in restaurants.
Good. Any favorite places?
I got a few. I've been fortunate enough to have some very nice dinners. I'm not going to mention any by name, but I do have my favorites. And that's something my girlfriend and I like to do when she comes is go have a nice meal. And even though it's difficult because I don't like to go to dinner the day before a game. Mm-hmm. Something I learned the hard way. I did it one time at a club I was working at, and the team lost. And then someone said, "Yeah, but I saw him the night before. You, how could he be concentrated?" You know. And at the end of the night, hey, I'm just a person. You know, my job is to be a coach, but I still like to have a normal life. And that's something I've had to learn to do again. Mm. Not to put all my habits or not habits, hobbies, or wishes aside. Mm-hmm. Just to try to keep certain people happy. I think it's important to keep myself happy, and that's one of the ways I like to do, is to go out for dinner or maybe play a round of golf with some of our sponsors. Just go to the beach. I love to go to the beach. When Connie's here, our dog is there, so we go to the beach and spend a lot of time there just be out and about and have a good time.
I read that maybe back in the day, or still, you were a very talented tennis player. Something you still do? Retired from tennis?
When I was in youth, I wasn't bad, I guess. But then I had to decide at some point where I wanted to put my energy. In America, it's you play every sport. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up playing tennis, basketball, baseball, soccer, American football, and any other sport that got thrown my way. And I really think that helped me through my development. Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, you do have to decide for in one direction. That doesn't mean I didn't play the other sports, but I just didn't focus. And probably my love of sports, besides basketball, is golf. You know, I've kind of put the tennis side of me away and years ago when I started playing golf. And that's something I can do, and I totally relax. You know, I'm not one of these guys on the course that's so driven, got to play perfect. If I lose a ball, shit, I just throw another one down and keep playing. But it helps if you're halfway decent at it.
I can imagine. But it's a really difficult sport for me.
It's a release.
Okay.
Because when I'm on the golf course, I don't think about basketball, and I think you have to have some type of release in your daily life or in your normal working life. If not, I know at the beginning I'd go home and I would stay up till 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning after a game. And now I might stay up till 2 o'clock, but the next day sometimes I can put it aside and say, okay, I just got to go get some fresh air. Go chase a white ball around.
Regenerate.
Exactly.
But it sounds easy, but it can, and you come home with a lot of adrenaline.
As a coach, you play the game. Yeah. But you have no way to release the energy. You know, and the one thing I've tried to do over the years is being calmer and calmer on the sideline, that I don't. And I used to be soaking wet after a game.
It's
not real healthy. And so for me, it's been about relaxation, but that drive, that intensity is still inside you.
Of course.
And that's not something you get rid of. And it's just a question how you can control your demeanor on the sidelines, but on the other side, when you get home, not take it with you. And one of the ways you can do that is that you have a hobby that you like to do and get your mind off it for a while.
I can tell you, even when we're doing the broadcast, you know, when we get home, we have a lot of adrenaline, even as commentary or a cameraman. It's just the excitement of the game. Coach, finally. Maybe that's in line with your golf. Any other New Year's resolutions? Think you want to keep up for, you know, your personal life or some things that
I'm not a big guy on New Year's resolutions because most of the time you don't fulfill them anyway. You know, you can say, "Hey, I'm going to lose weight," and then 10 days later, you're like,
"Exactly,
that looks good. I'm going to eat that." I think for me, it's just about, you know, trying to. Something I try to do is enjoy life. I really enjoy being a coach. I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it, you know. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to do it so many years, and you know, either play a game or coach a game my entire life. You know, that's a that's a dream for people if you think about. You know, I know a lot of people that go to work every day and they don't go to work with a smile on their face, you know, and they come home with a frown on their face. So I think I'm very fortunate in what I do, and I hope I can continue to do it and stay healthy as long as possible.
That would definitely be one of my wishes for you, Coach. So we have your camera right there. Which one? Yep. Your camera's here. Maybe to finalize this interview, and thank you so much again. So something that maybe you would like to share or say or wish to all the fans of Zorgenzekerheid Leiden.
First of all, I can only say thank you for the support, especially not just this season, but over the last two seasons as well. I know it's not easy at the moment, but I can promise you the guys are working hard. The guys want to become better. They are becoming better. And hopefully soon we can start seeing the results in the sports center. But you know, it is a game. It does take time. We've been very fortunate the last couple of years. But I think if we believe in this team, I think good things can happen. So thank you again for your support, and wish you a happy new year. I hope your Christmases were good, and we'll see you in the gym.
Many thanks again, Coach Spradley, and again, congratulations on a fantastic 2024 Super Cup National Championship. We know what can happen in our own arena in the new year. Wishing you personally and your family all the best. And to our fans, we'll see you in the new year. See you in Arena 1574. And again, many thanks also to our host today, Brasserie Park in Leidendorp. Wishing you all happy holidays and see you in the gym.
Deze podcast wordt mede mogelijk gemaakt door Leidse Letselschade Advocaten, Van Dorp Kentekenplaten, Lewo, Createx, Verstegen Auto's.